Welcome to the 11th episode of Reverse Sweat Radio. I'm Andy Ryan.
And I'm Toby Chas.
If you're looking for in-depth, detailed analysis of the IPL, then switch off now.
Historically, this is the third location Reverse Sweat Radio has been broadcast from. Today we're in sunny Maidenhead, and it's also our first morning session, and so we're eager to see how it's going to work out having cups of tea rather than beers in our house.
It's going to be a challenge, isn't it? Normally it's sort of an end-of-day relaxing thing. Now it's a sort of, well, it's a stretching it to say early morning.
But it is the weekend, so.
It is the weekend, so we're in a good mood for that. It's actually the first time we've been on air since the World Cup final, even though that seems forever, and well done, Toby, you called that one.
Correctly called, along with half the world's population, that India women were the chance there.
Yeah, no, it was a rare final that did live up to expectations. It was a great game, and I can have Mahela Jayawardene didn't deserve to be on the losing side in that game, but then...
No, and it was nice that, in a sense, that Tendulkar didn't get his legendary century, simply because the game was sort of a bit more than that, really.
And actually, Dhoni's innings was, yeah, for sheer chutzpah,
yep.
You know, just pulling himself in, turning the game around.
Particularly since he had been in particularly bad form. Well, not particularly bad form, but hadn't been in great form throughout the tournament.
The World Cup is now distant history.
It is.
And our attentions are focused solely on the more earthy world of county cricket. And, the season's underway. And, I mean, where would you be this summer if you had the choice of being a member of any county, putting your partisan lords... I mean, where would you be liking... Where would you be watching your cricket this summer?
I think
I'm giving
I
you a
would,
blank check.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think I would most like to be heading down to Taunton with a nice glass of cider. And I can't stand cider, but you feel it's the thing to do in Taunton.
I mean, surely a keg...
A keg, yes, exactly, for a long day of county cricket, watching Somerset. For a couple of reasons. Firstly, because they have got a spectacularly strong squad this year in all forms of the game, actually. Marcus Escothick, in the form of his life, it seems. Murali Kartik and Jonathan Mendes are both coming over. Steve Kirby's come in to bolster the bowling, and Kieran Pollard is bringing a bit of West Indian spice to the occasion.
They do genuinely seem to have all the bases covered.
Exactly. So there's that, but there's also, they've got a massively strong squad, but after coming second in every single conceivable tournament last season, it's going to be interesting to see how they play it this year.
Do you think there is a hangover from that, or is that just history?
It's quite interesting that in the first, this is probably reading far too much into it, but in their first game of the season against Warwickshire, Trescothick tried to do something a bit different and put Warwickshire into bat on what is traditionally a bit of a pancake of a pitch.
And it's
not working well after Warwickshire posted 640, and I think Somerset
are
120 for three
now,
or something at the moment. Yeah. So where will you be heading?
Well, I would love to be heading up to Headingley, a ground I've never been, and I would love to go and watch Yorkshire at Headingley. But it's also the principles on which this team's being built that I think is exciting. There's a real commitment to bring through young players, and also local youngsters. And I think actually, you know, going back into the midst of county cricket, you know, the history of county cricket before sort of, you know, coal pack, foreign players and stuff, this idea of looking in your local area and developing the best and the brightest amongst your local is how it should be.
And quite interestingly, there's the possibility that they will be able to field an 11 that is entirely born of people made in Yorkshire.
Custom designed in Yorkshire. Yeah.
Exactly.
I think it's interesting because it's successful as well. This isn't something that they're doing well. It might, but it's not just a cost-cutting measure. They're actually doing success.
But it's
does give them a link to Yorkshire. I mean,
exactly.
Supporters can go and watch a team that is a Yorkshire side.
And it harks back to the 70s and 80s when there was a very similar setup. We were reviewing Michael Vaughan's book the other day, and he was talking about the kind of angst that was associated with moving between Yorkshire and Lancashire, indeed in the other direction, having been born in Lancashire.
Yeah, and I think, you know, some people would call it a bit parochial or whatever. I think it's great to see, and I think I'd also, if I was up in Headingley, I'd love to see a bit more of Adil Rashid close up. I mean, I think he's someone his name's been mentioned so much, we've almost got bored of him. But, you know, he's a fantastic talent. I mean, he was destructive in the opening game of the county championship season. And, you know, this is a young English leg spinner having great success. I think we need to celebrate that.
So, Adil Rashid is one England prospect coming up. Incidentally, I remember the only time I ever watched him live was after the 2009 Ashes at Lord's in one of the one days, where he bowled nothing but half trackers and Michael Clarke did horrible things to him. So let's hope it's going to be better than that. But anyway, he's one England prospect. Who else is there around the county circuit this year who we should keep an eye on?
Well, I'm interested in Kent's Sam Northeast. I mean, he's another one of these prodigies who actually, I feel, has been around forever. I've heard his name mentioned again and again. I have a very loose personal connection to him in that I once saw my brother
a loose personal connection? Sounds like something you don't want to admit on air.
That's fairly dubious, yeah. My loose personal connection. But I saw him take apart my brother's bowling in a school match a while back. And he looked something special. He's been in the county system and touted as something special since the age of 13, 14. He got going last season in the county championship, but was steady rather than spectacular. Averages below 30. He's now Kent's number three. He's got second division bowling attacks to deal with. I imagine he'll have a big season, cash in. And I wouldn't be surprised if at the end of the year he's really pushed himself certainly to the fringes of England reckoning, if not the actual 11.
Another player who's sort of had a similar background, Rory Hamilton-Brown at excuse me, at Surrey, who 2 or 3 years ago was touted as an England prospect, and then Surrey did something which might have been them being a bit canny and not wanting him to play for England to stay with them when they made Hamilton-Brown captain. Now at the age of, I don't actually know off the top of my head, 23 or something.
23, we're thinking, maybe.
I suspect. May have got that completely wrong. He has got a big task ahead of him. Sorry, in Division 2, and a lot of people expecting them to go up. The club's in a bit of
spot on.
The club's in a bit of financial trouble, and they don't have that many overseas names to call on in the county championship.
To give him the captaincy in the first place.
Was, like, especially ahead of Ramprakash and people like that.
Yeah, and so I suppose as well as his playing capacity, he's very much going to be judged on what he can do as a captain.
Exactly, so I think it's a bit of a do or die season for him. Just one other player, briefly, who has been around the fringes of the England team for a while, Ravi Bapara, who there's no real obvious opening in the England side for him. Paul Collingwood will probably be replaced by Owen Moore directly. But you get the sense that he has got at some point to really stamp his
He's at the age
name.
Now where he could really, you know, a couple more seasons without breaking to the England side, and suddenly he's yesterday's man, isn't he? He's that youngster who nearly made it. And he's certainly got a good opportunity with Essex. I mean, Essex have had a horrible start to the season, haven't they? You know, they've had some horrible clubs. And, I mean, they are desperately in need of some of their batsmen to step up.
Yeah, I think they're due to lose this morning, I think, against
Middlesex.
Rather annoyingly, because I was going to go to Lords tomorrow to watch the end of that.
Well, you never know. What is it? I think Middlesex need 55.
55 to win it.
Maybe hurricane conditions in the St. John's Wood area.
Exactly.
But if we leave the English players for a second, think about, you know, we've got some great all-star foreign imports being brought in, some just for the 2020, but others for the county championship as well. I mean, who would you most like to see in action?
I'm quite excited about watching Jiminda Vaas, actually, someone completely the other end of his career from the Paparas and Hamilton Browns of this world. Having not featured at all, I think, in the World Cup, his international career seems slightly in decline. But he's always reminded me a little bit of Sean Pollock in the sense that when he loses his pace, he's still a cunning enough and a skillful enough bowler to be able to replace that with something
he's
else.
He's always been about a bowler sort of about guile, hasn't he? Rather than about surrounding.
And Northants have had a patchy time of it of late, and I think he might prove a good sort of hub around which to rebuild their bowling attack.
I mean, again, experience as well. You know, quite a few young players there at Northants is an experienced figure. And may well, I mean, he's no mug with the bat, actually,
no,
as well.
Exactly.
At second division level, he may well be able to
make a few runs. Who are you excited about?
Well, there's two here and two totally, you know, different extremes here. I mean, one is Kane Williamson, who the guy still isn't 21. He'll be playing at Gloucestershire this season. And I just think he is the most exciting young batsman in international cricket. I mean, not even 21, he's got a Test 100 behind him, a Test 100 made in India as well, in fairly challenging conditions. I mean, I think it would be fascinating to see him develop. I mean, he's still very young, see him come on as a player, see him deal with English conditions, which will be something new to him.
And actually, it's quite, we don't often get to see sort of the progress of New Zealanders generally over time. So it's going to be quite nice to watch him throughout the summer and see how it develops through time.
I actually don't think you can overstate his importance as a player in the international game, because New Zealand's cricket is desperately in need of figureheads, and he might just be that. On the other extreme, I would love to join you at Taunton and see Kieran Pollard in action. He's certainly a player that divides opinion, you know, world-class all-rounder or sort of slog-happy chancer, you know, take your pick. But I would admit to having a sort of guilty desire to see him at his most destructive, see him go after an attack.
And the great thing about him is he can actually be both of those. He can both be wonderful and a complete slogger in the space of two balls. You just never quite know what's going to transpire.
I always think he's a wonderful... His timing in arriving at the game of cricket just when 2020 was kicking off.
I mean, he timed it perfectly, didn't he?
10-15 years ago, he may well not have made anything like this mark, but his ability to sort of reasonable medium pace combined with sort of hard hitting.
Stepping back from the individuals of the tournament for a moment, the county championship, I mean, obviously the start of the county championship this year rather, it coincided with the start of the IPL. Rather a neat little coincidence there. And a lot of people see the county championship as something of a historical relic. But what is it about this season in particular that's going to dispel or enforce that opinion?
I think, it is an incredibly open competition. I think the format, for one thing, is excellent. I think that's one thing in a game where so often we dispute the way it's organised. The two division, eight teams in each division, the relegation promotion system is excellent. And it leads to such a well-contested competition. I think the other thing is you look at the first division and there's a host of teams who could reasonably hope to win it. I don't see Worcestershire doing it. Beyond that...
It's always one of these... It always goes down to the wire.
Yeah.
At the end of last season, we had this wonderful situation where on the last day, I think there were three sides who could win it.
I think it would be impossible to top that situation, which almost went to the final overs, didn't it? Quite an extraordinary.
But it was when Somerset were rained off against Durham
An extraordinary phenomenon. And I think the fact is, the top few teams there are so well balanced, and you know, sport relies on good, even competition. I think it's going to be that. What about this year in particular? I think interests you.
Well, to speed back about 30 years, I do this too often. Just before World
You're
Series Cricket started,
years,
yeah, exactly. I always try to start in the past. Just before World Series Cricket kicked off, Geoffrey Morehouse, the historian and cricket lover, travelled around the counties of England writing a book called The Best Loved Game, in which he sort of thought that cricket needed to be recorded at that moment because it would never be the same again. And I'm not suggesting that anything quite so seismic is happening at the moment, but I think that there are changes happening in the game at the moment. Things like the fact that a lot of clubs are very cash strapped.
I mean, there are therefore, genuine questions over some of the futures of the game.
Exactly. But also, there are these questions, exactly as you say, about individual clubs. But across the board, there's not as much money to bring in coal pack players. As we've discussed with Yorkshire, there's a lot of looking to homegrown talent. And there's a lot also of clubs having to turn themselves into successful businesses off the field in order to make money. So I think this is going to make for a very interesting dynamic within the club setup this year. So I think the county championship for all of those various different and intertwining reasons is going to be fascinating.
It's going to be interesting. I mean, just really to see the game justify itself, to really see it sort of cement its future. From the archives, and after a few episodes where we've looked at sort of more high-profile World Cup games, this week we've had a real sort of search through the dusty archives and found a real classic county game. We're in 1959 and we're at the Oval.
This game was courtesy of a tradition that's actually stopped the next year in 1960, which is that the county champions would play a match against a team which imaginatively called themselves the Rest. The 50s were a period of complete domination by Surrey, who won seven straight titles. But in 1959, Yorkshire getting to the fore with a pretty spectacular side actually, which we'll look at in a moment. So Yorkshire had won the county championship, and in fact had to beat Surrey, the reigning champions, just a week and a half before to secure the title. And then fittingly, Yorkshire headed off down to the Oval, Surrey's home ground, to play this game against
the rest.
And actually,
the rest of England's side containing a host of Surrey players in it as well.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's worth just quickly casting our eye down the team list of the rest of England. But, I mean, the names that immediately spring to mind are Ken Barrington, Mike Smith, Trevor Bailey, Godfrey Evans as the keeper, and
Tony Locke.
Tony Locke. And you just... well, anyway, that's just a little bit
of
context
for the team. Because we know this Champions County match, I suppose I'm not entirely certain how seriously it was seen, whether this was kind of an end-of-year jolly. But you imagine, you know, that rest of England side was a team of real quality.
Absolutely. But on the other hand, the Yorkshire side as well had a few very very established internationals. Brian Close, Ray Illingworth, and Fred Truman are the three most notable ones there. So it's set up to be a clash of titans.
and it was a very interesting. I mean, in terms of how seriously the sides were taking it, the rest won the toss and batted sort of extremely impressively. Lancashire's Jeff Puller, who perhaps, you know, what with the sort of Roses connection, had an added incentive, made 100. Mike Smith, top scorer in the county game that year, made 77. And by the end of that first day, they'd declared 384
that's
for 7.
That's extraordinarily quick scoring.
Well, for the time, it's a shade under 4 and over, isn't it? And actually, they'd really gone out and scored. You imagine they'd really set themselves up extremely well there. And they were helped by the fact that by the close of play, Yorkshire were in real trouble at 14 for 3. And at that stage, you know, having... chasing that sort of a target as well, the situation did look difficult. Things got a little better the next day. Yorkshire were eventually dismissed for 160 and promptly asked to follow on. And we again,
so you think having been crowned county champions the week before,
there is something a little bit humiliating about it, isn't it? You've had to come all the way down to the Oval, you know, the home of your nemesis, the team you've finally overtaken to win the county championship,
and then you're being absolutely thumped.
You're being embarrassed, aren't you? I mean, you really did hope this to be a celebration game, but no, they're asked to follow on. And things look better this time. But even then, they get to 132 for 3. They're still 92 runs behind at this stage. And with that batting lineup that the rest have got, you feel like they're having a substantial target.
This is still the second day, though. There are still two days left in this game.
The fight back finally came. You've got the 38-year-old John Wilson, who top scored in Yorkshire's first innings. He hit 100 in the second, and he was well assisted by Brian Close, who made 85. And between them, they built a lead for Yorkshire and gave them a foothold in the match. When Wilson went, though, it did prompt a sort of collapse of sorts. So Yorkshire found themselves 323 for 7, they're 99 runs ahead. At this stage, you still feel this should be a relatively easy chase for the rest. You know, we've spoken of some of their players. And then comes perhaps a key contribution. Truman makes 45 as a tailender, and that allows Yorkshire to scrape their way to 425. Suddenly, 202 to chase on the final day at the Oval. You know, the game now suddenly looks much more balanced.
And you wonder whether, because there's always this aspect with, you know, when you have, because there was I can't remember what they called it. It was a rest of the world side, captained by Graham Smith, that went down played Australia a couple of years ago. And there's always this question, and it's the same with the Lions in rugby, as to whether it's the side with slightly fewer sort of big names and slightly fewer stars, but who have played together for a whole season, or whether it's the side with just the huge, great individual talents who are going to...
It's really interesting, because that was an idea that I never really got into that, sort of engaged with that. I remember Flintoff and Harmison were there as sort of England's representatives, and that, you know, the rest of the world side struggled horribly against Australia, and it was such a duff game, series of games that hasn't been repeated.
But I wonder in this game whether the fact that Yorkshire have been playing together all season actually helped them in that kind of tight spot.
And you do wonder perhaps, I mean, the rest, there were a lot of great players in that side, and there must have have been a real desire to put one over the county championship.
Yep,
I mean,
exactly.
Yorkshire, frankly, have maybe never been a popular county
outside
the area. So
but anyway,
at the same time, in that core, maybe when the going got tough, was there that same desire?
We've left them dangling on 202
to chase. And it's a well... I mean, it's a respectable start. They get to 96 for the loss of 3 wickets. They've got Smith at the crease. They've got their captain, Don Carr, at the crease. You know, needing 107 from there to win it, it looks like they're on top at that stage.
With 7 wickets in hand.
With 7 wickets in hand. And then comes the deciding phase. I mean, Illingworth and Close just run riot. I mean, it's interesting in this game because you look at Truman as the sort of the core of that Yorkshire bowling attack. But it's not him that does the damage. 7 wickets fall for just 39 runs.
Mm.
And suddenly Yorkshire have grabbed a sort of fairly improbable 66-run triumph. I mean, we don't know. Perhaps that final day pitch at the Oval was receptive to Illingworth's turn.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Illingworth takes 4 for 40 and Close 5 for 47, fairly comparable figures. And you certainly don't think of them as being...
No,
comparable bowlers,
and also you see a lot, you know, good batsmen as well who lose their wickets. I mean, it is a fairly epic collapse, and in the end, Yorkshire's victory is fairly comfortable. And as you said at the start, I mean, this was a tradition that, I mean, what we still have now, we have that opening season fixture between the MCC and the winning
in Dubai.
No, God, yeah, what would
we don't do, tradition quite as we did a few years ago.
And frankly, it's well established as a warm up game, isn't it? And actually, there is something quite fun about the romance of this game, the rest of England having a crack at the champions, and you know you can imagine there's a spectacle at the end of the season. This
exactly, and also it's a nice way of keeping the county championships winners honest, as it were, by at the end of the season saying, fine, you've won it, but now here's the final hurdle.
It's sort of a final proof, isn't it? Because had Yorkshire lost this game, it just tarnishes it.
And if they'd lost it as badly as looked at one point.
Lost it by an innings, yeah. But in the end, the way they turned it around sort of further underlined their status as the champion county.
Book review, and this week we're going for a recent but slightly unusual book by Kevin Telfer, not a specialist cricket writer himself, called Peter Pan's First 11, The Extraordinary Story of J.M. Barrie's Cricket Team. Well, I suppose it sort of does what it says on the tin. The book charts the rise and fall of the cricket team created by J.M. Barrie, the author of Peter Pan.
The Allahack Barrie's.
I think we can have to decide how to pronounce it, because I'm not sure either.
I might just try and say it as little as possible.
Barrie's team. The Allahack Barrie's, they were called. Which was a team that basically brought together all of Barrie's acquaintances. It's a remarkable roster of people. Arthur Conan Doyle, the creator of Sherlock Holmes, is perhaps the most famous. But there's this vast array of explorers, scientists, medics, painters, playwrights, philosophers, and actually many other people are several of these things at the same time.
It's a wonderful team of polymaths, isn't it? You've got these... I love the little biographies when you have this person, he was sort of a lawyer, a scientist,
exactly.
A little bit of exploring
and in his spare time he was exploring the interior of Africa and doing sort of big game shooting or something.
Men who somehow, they didn't really have day jobs as such,
yep.
they just sort of did, they were rather wonderful careers. And this cricket team almost just became a wonderful excuse to bring them all together.
Exactly. And the club started in 1890 with its first match, and from there it played around one match a year. I mean, the cricket...
It got a little bit more, didn't it? There were very few games at the start, wasn't it? It never got to a full season.
No,
it started to play it
snowballed slightly. But mostly the matches consisted of sort of a week going out into a nice English countryside village and eating and drinking and making merry, and then playing a cricket game on the Saturday afternoon, and then eating, drinking and making merry a bit more and coming back into London on Sunday. Team ended when Barrie was in his 70s, and it's actually quite a poignant ending, the last ever outing of the Allahack Barrie's, whatever they are, when the visiting Australians, including Charlie McCartney and Arthur Maley, the leg spinner, joined the team for a game in West Scotland. Barry was now 70 and watched it from the pavilion. And there's this slight sense of sort of nostalgia. The man, a bit like Peter Pan, the man who never grew up, who couldn't quite let go of his cricket team. He was the only person playing in that match against West Scotland, the last match, which was in the 30s, from the original team.
And it was, I mean, the link between the cricket team and Barry's own life is incredibly close. I mean, the author, I mean, in calling it the Peter Pan's Leaven, sets out his case very clearly. I mean, Peter Pan never grew old. The cricket team was a large part of Barry's own attempt, perhaps, to sort of stay
absolutely
young.
And he wrote, I mean, he was the amount of time he invested in it, and he wrote little pamphlets about the team, and he was always, as well as organising, he put a lot of sort of creative input into it.
Well, there's this wonderful line where he talks about, the horror of my boyhood was that I knew a time would come when I must also give up playing games. I mean, it's an extraordinary admission, really, by him that, you know, for him, playing was what kept him young, was what kept him excited about life, and cricket was a large part of that.
Exactly, but there's also this tension between whether, which was quite present in the cricket at the time and is still quite present, of whether cricket is play, i.e. an escape from the world, or whether it is a way to really engage with politics and engage with various other issues.
And this sort of conflict, there's a wonderful line in the book where he talks about, the author asks, where did the Allah Akbaris fit in the scheme of things? Were they the effeminate bohemians threatening British culture with their degeneracy? Or were they part of the imperialist ethic? Yep. I mean, cricket was both those things. It was fun at country houses. It was play that Barry loved. But it was also sort of that, you know, the Baden
completely
Powell
entwined.
Of the
Scouts, yeah, exactly.
It was, you know, a very military thing. Yep. You put yourself below the team, below the nation, and you work for that. And it was very interesting. I mean, and those two different visions of cricket sort of still exist today, don't they? I mean, that's
sort
of difference between looking at the game as play and looking at it as a sort of way to mould character and stuff.
And I suppose they came very much, this all comes very much to the fore in the 30s, particularly in the West Indies, but I mean, across the empire, when cricket became a way, in India as well, it became a way for people to stamp their authority over the English.
It became
imperialist.
Very sort of overtly political, didn't it?
Yep.
I mean, I think the interesting thing about the Allah Akbaris is the conclusion is they sort of had both, didn't they? I mean, they were, there was something. You know, they took the game in a sort of very light-hearted spirit. Often they would joke, they would enjoy it. But at the same time, it was full of players, people like Conan Doyle, who would go
who
off
were actually
fight
quite
the,
good.
Well, not fight, who would work as a doctor in the Boer War and stuff. People who were very committed to the imperialist ideas. It had both. It wasn't just a team of sort of bohemians.
And there's also this interesting tension between a lot of the documentary evidence from the team, which still survives, is constantly joking about cricket. I mean, making very clear that they're not taking cricket seriously. And Barry actually writes a booklet before a match in 1893, which is entitled Hints to the Team by Their Captain, where, and some of the hints are things like, don't practice on opponent's ground before match begins, this can only give them confidence, and things like this. And so he's constantly doing himself down, but you actually get the sense that this whole thing was actually taken quite seriously
as an
exercise.
A lot of time in it, and he liked winning as well. He was quite open about that fact. I mean, in a way, we talk about sort of players being kind of an escapist thing. I mean, Barry was a very small man. He wasn't a particularly talented cricketer, and in a lot of ways, this team was full of, it had a lot of writers and artists who maybe wanted to be sort of strong men, kind of men of action, men of power. And the cricket team was sort of a minor way of doing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
At the same time, you had men like Conan Doyle, who very much were men of action, who, you know, when they weren't playing for the Allah Akbaris, were sometimes playing, you know, for the MCC. So.
And absolutely. And the team becomes almost its own social world as well. Barry creates this amazing, which is all about these whole weekends. It's not just going and playing cricket. It's having a weekend where you have all kinds of other things going on.
There's this very clear link between sort of his love of the English countryside and the cricket, isn't there?
Yep.
There's, you know, you go to beautiful villages and you play cricket, and it becomes an excuse for that. I mean, there is also, I think, in terms of looking at, it's not a book about cricket, it's a book about much more than cricket. But there's also this interesting idea that even at that time, you know, we're talking about the very early 20th century and the end of the 19th, there are some who feel that cricket's golden age is past, which I think the author, Telfer, sort of sees the how amusing this is.
Yep.
You know, 100 years on, we're always talking about
cricket. Yeah, exactly. There's always, it's the blue remembered hills, it's always looking back.
Even at this time, there's a sense the game was becoming too commercial, and it's maybe entertaining and important to remember that this idea of you know, the grass was greener, etc., has always been there in the game. From the blogs, and as mentioned at the start of the podcast, the IPL's beginning and the county championships beginning coincided this year. And Toby, you found an interesting article, well, comparing and looking at the two.
Yeah, Barney Roney in The Guardian last Saturday, a week ago today, writes an excellent piece in which he tries to keep everyone happy. He spends a long time saying why the IPL is such a dreadful thing,
which keeps you happy.
Why it's based entirely on mass marketing, and why, if I can take a moment to read out a spectacular quotation, why watching, say, Jacques Callis trying to hit every ball for six, it was as though Mr. Darcy had given up smouldering silently across the tea table and instead decided just to get his nipples pierced and go out dogging in a motorway lay-by.
Brutal, but it's quite effective in getting across the way that
getting across the point.
Especially that for those who see 2020 as a sort of
complete travesty, you know,
a nasty, almost sort of bastardised version of the actual game, is quite a brutal expression.
But what he concludes quite interestingly from this piece is that actually the last sentence is that it feels above all like a summer to celebrate the brilliantly diverse riches at our disposal. And what he effectively advocates, which I think is quite a powerful argument, is that we should stop trying to say that the IPL isn't cricket, and that, because it isn't the county championship, it isn't test cricket, it isn't anything like that, and we should start sort of compartmentalizing a bit more and just saying,
I think
enjoying each on its own terms.
Always looked at it because of, I think, what you've said, that the brashness of its marketing, we've instinctively looked at it as competition for the other forms of the game. And I think the article's strength, I think, is in the way he basically says, well, let's look at the diversity of the game and let's accept it in its different parts. I mean, he, I think, is we've read the quote, is fairly explicit that he does see it as an inferior form.
Yep.
But he actually doesn't necessarily see it as a threatening form.
No, it's a parallel form, absolutely.
And they do offer, I mean, I think the point he makes is that they do offer two entirely different products.
And there's something quite comforting almost about he makes the point that the Mumbai Indians are sponsored by Pepsi, MasterCard, Kingfisher, Wrigley's Chewing Gum, Royal Stag Whiskey, whereas Yorkshire are sponsored by Brian's Fish and Seafood Restaurant and Aunt Bessie's Yorkshire Puddings. And he says, you know, it's a completely, to sort of mix my metaphors and use an entirely inappropriate metaphor, it's a completely different ball game, one from the other. And that actually perhaps there's a way of accepting that.
If you're going to be the one thing I suppose you could say is that whereas it's nice to recognise the diversity of the game, etc., etc., in reality there is competition between the two games. I mean, we are looking at the fact that certain players haven't turned up for the start of the county championship season because they are in the IPL. You know, the two versions of the game will compete, and you imagine that may get more extreme in the future. You know, there are a decent number of players who've chosen to start the season in the IPL and then come to county championship.
But actually, as well, they are. I was reading some of the comments on the Guardian website below the piece, and there was someone who was saying, "Well, why would I be interested in the IPL? I'm not interested in South Africa's domestic setup or Australia's domestic setup. What's different about the IPL?" And of course, the obvious argument against that is actually that the IPL is an international tournament. It brings everyone from around the world together. In a sense, it's coincidental that it's held in India. But I think actually more and more it is becoming a kind of rootless, rather than being global, it's not rooted anywhere. The fact that, I mean, as far as I can tell, and I haven't invested much time in trying to follow it, but it's absolutely impossible to follow because all of the players are playing for different teams every single year.
I think this it was inevitable that this discussion was going to turn into an IPL slagging match, and let's just let that happen. And I think the real issue is that, you know, county championship, people do have roots. They do have attachments to sides. And the issue with the IPL, the dream of the IPL, those organisers of it, would have been that we would all find a franchise that we would associate with. It's very difficult when the player turnover is such.
Exactly.
When suddenly one auction means that all the players you liked in one team have gone. I sort of like the fact that Shane Warne captains Rajasthan.
Yes.
I haven't really been able to get beyond that.
There's a kind of fatal flaw at the heart of that, though, isn't there? The money is generated, you know, these huge auctions that everyone has, and that the money is generated by swapping the players between the teams. But it is exactly that which makes the whole thing so difficult to market,
I mean,
actually.
I think in a way, the point of the man who commented on the article is quite valid in that I think it may well become a more domestic league. I think that actually, you know, people from Mumbai will follow the Mumbai Indians, etc., etc. And that's actually would be enough. You know, there are enough people in India to sustain that sort of interest in the game. But I suppose to conclude, I think Ronay's vision of a perfect world in which we spend, you know, half the day watching IPL, we squeeze in a quick 20-20 before heading off to watch the county championship is an interesting one. I think is at least kind of a nice contribution against all those sort of doom merchants who see the inevitable death of county cricket. Finally, to the debate, and this week we're returning to that age-old question of country versus county, and there's a rather interesting story behind why we're talking about this.
I was up at my local club in Cambridgeshire last week, mowing the outfield and rolling the square, and I was turning to the old groundsman there. He's about 95 and has seen most things, and he was telling me about a match back in the day when, for some bizarre reason, Yorkshire came and played against this absolutely tiny little club in the middle of nowhere in Cambridge. And Geoffrey Boycott was playing, and it was right at the start of Geoffrey Boycott's career, and Boycott was batting, and news came through on the telephone that Boycott had been called up to play in his first Ashes series, and word got out onto the pitch, and word got to Boycott about this, at which he walked off the pitch, threw his bat onto the ground, and said, "Well, now I'm an England player. I don't need to be bothering with these stupid little games."
Something of the boycott to that.
Exactly, and I wondered whether he was right. Should England players be bothering with stupid little games, and should stupid little games be bothering with England?
And I mean, is it up? I suppose we're really thinking about. Is it up to county cricket? Do we judge county cricket on whether it delivers for the England team, or whether it produces a quality of game that's enough to give us a top 11? Because there's a bizarre sort of contradiction within the county game in that you work really hard to develop a talented player. You put perhaps years of coaching. I mean, I
mentioned a lot of money.
Sam Northeast earlier in the programme. I mean, he's been in the Kent County system since he was 11 or 12.
Yep.
You know, they used to send personal coaches to his school. And if he plays a season for them and then goes off to the England setup, never to be seen again, it's a bizarre, it's almost a sort of disincentive for counties, isn't it,
to develop. Exactly. And also there's something I think quite detrimental about too aggressively seeing county cricket as a feeder for the national game, because county cricket then inevitably comes to be seen as a kind of second class sport, in the same way as, or in fact in completely the opposite way as, Premier League football is seen as the pinnacle of the game.
Well, exactly. Premier League football, the clubs are king, and the countries will occasionally borrow
the players. Yeah.
And I think what's interesting is that if county cricket is seen purely as a feeder competition, then it does rather play the game down. You know, it needs to be seen as the elite competition within English cricket. It needs to be seen as a global.
And
but
it's
your question of also how do the players see it is quite an interesting one. Mm. I mean, do England's internationals go back to their counties and treat it with seriousness?
Well, it's interesting that I was trying to think of another team game which had this to quite such an extent. But if you are a regular England player, you will basically never play for your county.
Which isn't the same for either
of the two other big sports, rugby or football. And therefore, are the games incompatible? And if so, is it that we are playing too much international cricket nowadays, and therefore that the players don't have enough chance to play for their counties? And what was, I was just wondering in my head, and I don't really have an answer, but was the situation the same 40 years ago?
It is interesting. You certainly used to get the impression that players would play for their... I mean, central contracting was obviously a very important move for the development of the England team, but it also quite explicitly said, you know, you are now a member of...
Exactly, of the ECB rather than of the counties.
I thought it was very interesting when Kevin Peterson's availability came up last season and how he was linked with a lot of counties, and, you know, he's finally gone for Surrey, and he... But it was a very odd one, because a lot of fans would be like, well, do we need to sign Kevin Peterson?
Exactly.
I mean, you know,
it's a lot of money for a couple of days.
You know, the boycott anecdote's interesting, because there must be, for some England players, a sense of when you go for your county that this is sort of practice, this is sort of, you know, a harmless net almost.
Especially
for those players who are going there with no real selection pressure.
And it's similar, in a sense, for the Kolpak players. And there's become a huge divide in the Kolpak players, because there have been some very... honest is perhaps the wrong word, but honest in the sense that they have played for counties year in, year out. I mean, I'm thinking the kind of Dale Benkensteins of this world, for instance. And then there are some who jet in at, you know, the last minute. I mean, Essex had the classic when
Dwayne Bravo
came and played, you know, scored two and went 10 off and over in the 2020s last year.
Yeah, it does put clubs in a very odd position. I mean, you're effectively told, take the development of youth seriously. We were talking about Yorkshire.
Yep.
But you're almost told,
don't take it too seriously.
You know, if they get too good, then they're whisked off to England. And you'd like to think there'd be a compromise where players could spend a little bit more time with their counties.
Yep.
But then, you know, the international schedule crammed as it is.
Which is why Surrey perhaps have been quite canny in making Hamilton Brown their captain. Is there a question there as to whether he's ours, not England's.
And at present, it seems like the compromise exists, because the counties are almost paid off in a way, aren't they?
Yep.
The ECB will sort of pay the money. But it's interesting, you know, we talked about a big season for county cricket, and this debate and this sort of argument will go on and on. Well, thank you for listening to our 11th episode, and we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with more tales of... county championship fun, maybe even slip in a bit of international cricket, probably not any IPL.
If we're feeling ambitious.
I don't know, maybe in the next 2 weeks I'll have developed a passionate attachment to the boys from Rajasthan, but we'll see.